Welcome to the Conservation Is podcast, a Conservation Chat UK production. This is the place where we start the conversation about all things conservation and share them with our listeners. You can join in and interact with us using the hashtag Conservation Is and the hashtag Conservation Chat UK. Let's start the conversation. Do you have a passion for British wildlife and conservation? Are you currently engaging in related research or have previous experience to share? Do you need a platform to share your findings or passion with like-minded people? We have the perfect opportunity for you. Join us for our 2020 conference on Thursday the 29th of October in Torquay, Devon. If you would like to spend the entire day listening to people from varying backgrounds in animal conservation, please book your ticket with us on Eventbrite. All you have to do is type Conservation Chat 20 into the search bar. We're currently offering tickets for just £19 per head when you use the promotional code SUPEREARLYBIRD, all in uppercase. Full price tickets are £35. This discount ends at 4 p.m. on the 2nd of April. If you'd like to present, please email your abstract to us at conservationchat@outlook.com before 5 p.m. on Friday the 5th of June 2020. Additionally, if your organisation would like to sponsor the event, please also get in touch. We have a variety of packages to suit your business needs. That said, let's get into the podcast. Hello and welcome back to the Conservation Is podcast. You're here with Laura and Stu and an extra special guest, our kitty cat Cracker. So if you hear any little meows or bells ringing in the background, that's him getting snuggles. So today we're coming to you with a little bit of information about one of our projects. So not only do we run Conservation Chat UK, but we also run a project called Operation Cetacean. You may already be following us there, you may already know a little bit about it, you may have even been to one of our talks, but today we're just going to kind of just have a chat about it, let you guys know what we're doing, what we've done in the past, and anything else that kind of comes up along the way. So what should we start with?
So we've been going officially for over a year, and we have quite a lot of engagement. But Laura, just for anyone who's new to Operation Cetacean, can you just, you know, you've been there from the start, so can you give us an overview?
Yeah. So I first began my research of the harbour porpoises in Brixham in 2017. I started in the summer. It's for a university project. And I wanted to know how marine vessels were impacting the presence and behaviour of the local harbour porpoise population. So I got into the research during that summer and I actually found quite quickly some very interesting results. So I was tallying behaviours alongside marine vessel type, frequency, and whether they were moving or stationary. And I actually had some really interesting results which kind of point towards or suggest that as marine vessels increase in frequency, you see fewer porpoises and you see fewer behaviours coming from those porpoises. So just a little bit of background about porpoises and kind of, I need to explain why they're such a kind of sensitive species. So this research is important because harbour porpoises are kind of live fast and live to eat, eat to live type animal, and they spend over 88% of their time feeding. They eat a variety of prey, including sand eels, and anything they can really get their hands on, really, or get their fins on. And they use echolocation to find this food. But if they're getting disrupted or disturbed on a regular basis, then this can interrupt this really important behaviour. So I found this important result that said that marine vessels were negatively impacting these porpoises. So it kind of ran from there, really. And I've been studying them ever since. I went on to research them for my dissertation at university. And we covered a little bit more than just behaviour in marine vessels. We also were looking at how tidal state influences these particular porpoises. So, and now we just carry on with the same research, yeah, gathering.
So I think just from your university project, you've sort of developed now with quite a keen little team what works around you and does stuff. just to sort of raise awareness about the harbour porpoise, but also other marine mammals within our local area. And we're fortunate to get the first piece of research published, just looking at the impact of these marine vessels on the harbour porpoise. And like Laura said, it is very important because they eat often, because they don't have a real thick blubber cover like seals do or some of the bigger dolphins. But not that many people know about the impact that boats or marine traffics can have on them. So can you just give an overview on how people should behave with them if they're out in their boats or jet skis?
Yeah, so I think this is the most, one of the things I'm most passionate about since kind of doing my research and uncovering some of these results is I'm not sure that people really understand how they should behave around cetaceans.
No, I don't think anyone intentionally wants to harm them.
No, definitely not.
They can.
I think any cetacean, whether that be a porpoise, a dolphin, a whale, just humans love them and find them so fascinating and beautiful, and we want to get close to them. However, this isn't necessarily the best thing for the cetacean. There's lots and lots of research out there covering a variety of cetacean species, from humpback whales to killer whales to bottlenose dolphins, common dolphins, porpoises, Risso dolphins, that all point towards boat activity and disturbance being a big stressor on these animals. And also changes like normal behaviours, so we're interrupting their repertoire of behaviours that they should be doing without us there, but we get involved and then they change what they're doing basically, which can result in reduced resting patterns, increased diving behaviour, extra energy expenditure. The kind of possibilities are endless here. But if you're a boat owner or you're on a boat, it's really important that if you see any cetacean, that you do not chase after it, you do not approach it. You can let the cetacean come to you, that's not a problem, but if you approach it, you speed up to it in your boat, that's actually technically against the law and it's going to be really stressful for the animal. So you want to remain, I like to say 200 metres, but the minimum is 100 metres according to legislation. But 200 metres will make sure that they've given, you're giving them plenty of space and, they won't feel too threatened.
I think also as well, you'll have better enjoyment from the dolphins or porpoises.
Yeah, you'll see a lot more.
Obviously, people chase after them because they want to get a photo and so on, but actually they generally just disappear, especially porpoises. I mean, sometimes dolphins will come and interact with the boats and that's their choice. And please, do enjoy them. But if you want a bit of time with the porpoise, it's best just to keep your distance. If possible, turn your engine off and just sit and enjoy them.
Yeah, noise is a really big issue with cetaceans. They're so sensitive and they use echolocation and they can be really overwhelmed, stressed and distressed by noise pollution, and we know from years of scientific background that noise pollution is a problem for cetaceans in the ocean. So best thing is turn off the engine, remain at a safe distance, minimum 100 metres, and just enjoy them. Watch them with your binoculars, if you've got a decent camera zoom. Use those tools to allow you to get close without getting too close.
So just with research at the moment, because it's key to keep researching these animals, I know we've done stuff locally, some talks, we've talked in local schools and universities, we've done stuff at the Mammal Society Student Conference and also the ASAP Conference, and we're booked in for the Conservation Chat Autumn Conference as well. But all that's focused about our early research and some stuff we've just started. So what's the future of Operation Cetacean? What other stuff would you like to do or achieve?
So I've kind of got a handful of things that I personally want to achieve with this. One of the most important ones is just gathering as much knowledge and information about these porpoises that is possible. Because to our knowledge, we're the only ones that have actually ever studied them or have been published, had our study published about them. So it's really key that we understand them, why they're using the area, why the area is such a draw for them, why it's so important. Because it's not just porpoises, there's so many animals that use the area. It's really biodiversity rich, but it just so happens that it sits around the corner from one of the busiest fishing ports in the UK. So we've got that kind of to contend with. But another thing is getting the information out there and making sure that people know how to behave around porpoises, how to behave around cetaceans in general and other marine wildlife, and to reduce their impact on the ocean and on the animals that live within it as much as humanly possible. But also a cool project that we're working on, and it's an ongoing thing, so it has no beginning, has no end. It's just something we do when we can, is gathering photo evidence of the porpoises and then logging their dorsal fins, because you can tell and identify porpoises from each other using identification software. So I've literally just been doing some of this on my computer, and I've now identified 4 different porpoises, individual porpoises. So that's really cool. But this kind of data allows us to know which porpoises are coming back time and time again, whether it's a resident population, or whether it's just a utilised area, but porpoises keep coming back here. So that's a really useful piece of information. Yeah, and I think
people can get involved with that as well. So if you're a keen wildlife photographer, or indeed you already have photos of porpoise, especially close up, we need really good shots of the fins.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to support our research, then please get in contact via Facebook or via the Conservation Chat website, where there's some contact details. But that's just great for getting people involved. And obviously there's just a small team of us, so as many lenses pointed at the porpoise as possible, obviously without disturbing them, will really help us, but ultimately help the porpoise too.
See, at the moment, we do all of our research from land. So we don't have, especially with the marine vessel kind of research side of things, it doesn't make sense to do that in a boat, because we would be impacting or influencing the results, because we would be in a boat too. So it doesn't make sense to do that. We do a lot of land research. But we soon would also like to start collecting some acoustic data of marine vessel noise in the area, in the water. And hopefully, and this is quite hard to do without one of these special sea pods that you can just anchor up and leave in the ocean, it'll collect noises, but hopefully we can actually record some porpoise clicks, and we cannot wait to share that with you once we manage to get it.
So a sea pod's a bit like I call it a bit like an underwater bat detector, but obviously for cetaceans. So you just leave it in the ocean, and any frequencies or clicks emitted by dolphins, porpoise, and so on will be recorded, and you just take it out of the water again, and you can just literally, it's not straightforward as this, but literally plug it in your computer and see what species.
It's a very passive method of collecting data, basically. You can anchor it up and you can leave it, and I think someone told me, I think they've got about a month's worth of battery on them, so you can just leave them for a month, then go and collect the data off them, and then it's quite a nifty little way of collecting data.
So we keep talking about porpoise, but I know a lot of the time when I see porpoise, people say that they're dolphins. Can you just, we love dolphins, and then we see dolphins and so on, but porpoise are actually our most common cetacean, but actually we still know very little about them.
Mm.
So could you just give an overview of perhaps what the differences are?
Yeah. So we've got the family cetacea, and within this family we've got whales, which include things like humpback whales, grey whales, blue whales. Then we've got dolphins, which actually includes killer whales, orcas, bottlenose, common dolphins, Risso dolphins, and then we've got porpoises. And I think there's only 7 species of porpoise in the world. You may have heard of one of them, it's called the vaquita, and this is native to the Gulf of Mexico, but unfortunately there's probably only 7 of them left. But basically, the main difference between porpoises and dolphins is the fact that porpoises have a very different behaviour repertoire. They have physical features, which I'll go through in a minute, but basically, dolphins are incredibly social animals. They travel in groups. They spend a lot of time together socialising, playing. They engage a lot in acrobatics, and they'll bow ride. And this is why people find them such a joy to interact with. However, porpoises basically do not do any of that. You only ever really see them leap out of the water if they're chasing prey or if they're engaging in mating behaviour. They don't really socialise majorly. I mean, mothers and babies will spend about 10 to 11 months together. But generally, they're not into socialisation. They don't really play. They spend 88% of their time feeding. They literally are trying to get enough food in each day to maintain this thick blubber layer that they require to avoid hypothermia, which is a big killer for porpoises, and starvation. There's a researcher in Denmark called Leopold, and he actually made a very profound statement that porpoises, harbour porpoises in particular, are nearly always on the edge of starvation. So that's kind of the behavioural, maybe a bit of physiological, but
just with the starvation and so on, and the size of the porpoise, they've actually suffered in our local area quite recently with the storms, and we've been contacted with a lot of porpoise washed up. So maybe we'll just post a few of the pictures of them in this podcast so you can have a look. Some of them were a bit underweight. Some of them, just obviously because they're small animals and the strength of the storms, likely suffered. Sorry, lower physical traits.
Yeah. So porpoises, you can notice the difference between a porpoise and a dolphin. Dolphins have a melon and a very distinct beak. And porpoises don't. They've got a much rounder face. And additionally, they've got small, short, triangular dorsal fins, whereas dolphins have very long, sweeping, scythe-like dorsal fins. Also, porpoises are just generally a lot smaller. A harbour porpoise will grow to be about 1.5 metres. So, they're not very big at all.
So another physical feature or difference between dolphins and harbour porpoises is their teeth. So dolphins have very cone teeth, like a round tooth. And with some species, you can use them to age the dolphins, a bit like if you slice through a tree, you can count the rings. Where porpoise really have like a spade-like tooth. It's quite hard to describe, but if you Google them, you'll be able to see the difference between the porpoise teeth and the dolphin teeth. So it's just another clear indication that they're from different families.
But I think, I really think the first thing you want to look for is the dorsal fin, because that can be a really good indicator. And then what is that animal doing? Because if it's feeding, making really like kind of irrational movements or like unpredictable movements, it's probably a porpoise. But if it's a dolphin, it'll probably be in a big group. Porpoises generally don't... They'll feed near each other, but they won't really kind of hang out together. So that's kind of the main thing you want to look for, is behavioural kind of cues.
And these are porpoises again. They are the most sighted cetacean. So if you do want to get to your coast to look for a marine mammal, obviously you've got your seals, which you've got a good chance of seeing. But if you want to see a cetacean, there's lots of good headlands around the country where you can see these, whether in Wales, Yorkshire, North Devon, and indeed where we go a lot around the Torbay area. Obviously, just be safe when you're there, but if you do have a good vantage point, you can look down and often see these animals quite close to shore. So I think once you see them, you'll sort of notice the movement of them. And if you've seen dolphins before or dolphins on the TV, you'll just notice the difference between them.
Yeah.
So how can we help porpoise, Laura? We mentioned behaving around them with boat traffic and so on, but what else can we do?
So this might be controversial to say, but fishing is one of the biggest impacts on all cetacean species, primarily because fishing nets generally aren't discriminant, and basically, is it 3 porpoises are caught accidentally in fishing nets every single day in the UK?
That's in the UK, yeah.
And that's that we know of. So being like getting caught in nets and drowning, basically, is one of the biggest threats. So
I think as a consumer, what you can do with that is obviously just think about, if you do eat fish, where does it come from? What species is the fish? How it was caught? And how sustainable that actual fishery is.
Yeah. Another thing is just how much fish is being taken from the ocean, because harbour porpoises are a live-to-eat animal. They need a lot of fish every single day, and they don't actually, believe it or not, considering their kind of physiology and their sensitivities, they don't opt for fattier, oilier fish. They just eat what they can get because they need to just keep that food coming in. And another cool fact, which is quite worrying really, is female harbour porpoises with calves are unable to feed milk to their calves unless they're completely stopped. So they can't carry on moving and fishing, so they've got to interrupt their feeding behaviour to feed their babies. So this means that mothers are vulnerable because A, they're giving a lot of their nutrients to the young, B, they've got these environmental pressures, and then they've got the marine traffic, the acoustic noise, the fishing boats. It's just kind of, I don't see how they're able to cope with all of these factors, really.
Yeah, and I think with all conservation as well, it's like just learn to love these animals. I think the more we learn about them, I mean, I still get a buzz every time I see one. So the more we learn about them and realise actually we have got these amazing animals on our own doorstep, we don't have to go a million miles away to see wonderful marine life. I think, you know, everyone's within about 70 miles of the coast in the UK. Yeah. So these animals are there. You don't have to go to Africa to see elephants and so on. We've got these amazing porpoise on our doorstep, and really we should be promoting them as a keystone species.
Yeah.
Because the more whales and dolphins we have, it actually shows in a healthier ecosystem.
It really does. So harbour porpoises are seen as a sentinel species, and what that means is that if there's harbour porpoises in the area, that means that there's a good kind of ecosystem underneath them. So there's going to be substrate, there's going to be plankton, there's going to be fish, then there's going to be apex predators, which harbour porpoise are. So that's why we should be really concerned if they start to disappear, because that means that they're probably being pummeled from top down and bottom up, really, through lack of food and maybe some anthropogenic impacts.
So I think we'll probably leave it for now. It's like a quick introduction to Operation Cetacean. But if you do want to know more, please head over to Operation Cetacean's Facebook page. There's also a section on Conservation Chat UK's website, which is www.conservationchatuk.com. And we mentioned before that we'll be presenting at the Conservation Chat conference in October. And I think by then we'll have another year's worth of data, and hopefully we'll have lots more fin records as well, so we can share them with you.
So yeah, we've also actually recently uploaded some information onto the website. So if you go to www.conservationchatuk.com, there's an Operation Cetacean section, and in there you can read about the team, you can learn like a very short introduction as to what we do. And additionally, we've uploaded my research from last year. We've got a leaflet and a poster, which are all free for you to download and read. So you can kind of educate yourself about what we've been up to, have a look at our results. But please make sure you head over to Facebook and follow us there. We try to keep it as updated as possible. And now that the weather's turning and spring's on the way,
hopefully,
we're definitely going to be out in Torbay collecting data on porpoises a lot more with our volunteers. So any support you can give us would be greatly received. That said, I think we're going to leave it there, and we look forward to speaking to you next time.